Hey, I'm Chris, and welcome back to Surgery Shelf Prep, part two of our deep dive into spinal cord trauma.
And I'm Mars, ready to hit you with some more high-yield characteristic spine fractures and injuries that the shelf loves to test. These are distinct patterns, and knowing them inside and out will really set you apart.
You got it, Mars. Let's jump right into some upper cervical spine specifics that aren't just about the dens. First up, the Jefferson fracture.
The classic C1 burst fracture. What's the common mechanism and what's often surprising about the neurological exam, Chris?
This one's often seen after an axial load mechanism, like a shallow water dive or a falling object directly on the head. The surprising part, and a classic shelf trap, is that the neuro exam is often normal. You might get immediate neck pain, but the patient can be neurologically intact.
Right, and that's because the C1 ring, the atlas, bursts outwards, actually widening the spinal canal, which can spare the cord. But stability is key here. How do we determine if a Jefferson fracture is stable or unstable?
It's all about displacement. Anatomic clues point to stability, a four-part burst of the atlas ring, where the fracture widens the lateral masses. It's considered unstable if there's combined lateral mass displacement greater than 7 millimeters. Also, if the atlanto-dens interval is greater than 3 millimeters, that implies a torn transverse ligament, also making it unstable.
Got it. Imaging-wise, what's the best way to screen for this, and what's a crucial add-on if it's unstable?
The best screen is a CT C-spine to accurately measure that lateral offset. Remember to add a CTA neck to rule out a vertebral artery injury. That's a huge self-trap. Forgetting to screen those vertebral arteries can lead to a delayed stroke in an otherwise intact patient.
Absolutely crucial. So, management, stable versus unstable?
For a stable Jefferson fracture, less than 7 millimeters displacement, and an intact transverse ligament, a rigid cervical collar for 6 to 12 weeks is usually sufficient. But if it's unstable, greater than 7 millimeters displacement, or a ligamentous injury, or any neurological findings, then it's a halo vest, possibly with posterior C1 C2 fusion.
Fantastic. Now let's pivot to another infamous C2 fracture, the hangman fracture.
This one sounds ominous, but again, often not fatal. What's the typical mechanism for a hangman fracture?
This is usually a high-speed MVC with hyperextension, leading to sudden neck pain. Similar to the Jefferson, the neuro exam is usually intact. The canal often widens with this fracture, which helps keep the neurological exam normal.
Right, the bilateral C2 pars or pedicle fracture. How do we classify its stability and what's the general treatment strategy?
It's classified by Levine-Edwards types. Type 1 is stable with less than 3 millimeters of displacement. Types 2, greater than 3 millimeters, is displacement plus angulation. And type 3, facet dislocation, are unstable. Imaging is a CTC spine, and if there's a neurological deficit, you add an MRI.
And the treatment correlates with stability, right?
Exactly. Type 1, stable fractures can be managed with a hard collar for 6 to 12 weeks. Type 2 usually require a halo vest. For the most unstable type 3s, or if the halo vest fails, you're looking at posterior C1 to C3 fusion or anterior C2 fixation.
All right, let's move lower down the spine to a common injury with a critical associated finding, the chance fracture.
The flexion distraction injury, often seen in lap belt MVCs. What's the classic presentation, and why is that seat belt sign so important?
The patient will complain of thoracolumbar back pain, and you'll often see that telling seat belt sign on the abdomen. This sign is crucial because it directly correlates with the mechanism of injury, a horizontal fracture through the vertebral body, pedicles, and posterior elements, commonly at T12 to L2.
And the absolute non-negotiable imaging requirement here is something often overlooked on the shelf.
You got it. While a CT thoracolumbar spine is needed for the fracture itself, the shelf pitfall is missing hollow viscous injury. You must get an obligatory CT abdomen and pelvis with contrast because there's a high rate of associated small bowel, mesenteric, pancreas, or duodenal injuries. Missing these can lead to delayed peritonitis.
Time is tissue, and bowel perforation is no joke. treatment for transfractures?
If it's a stable, bony-only fracture, a TLSO brace for 2 to 3 months is usually sufficient. But if it's unstable, ligamentous injury, neurological deficit, or kyphosis, then it requires posterior spinal fusion or fixation. All right, we've covered 3 major spinal fractures so far. Let's talk about a specific spinal cord injury that frequently presents as a pediatric problem.
That's called SCIWORA, or SCIWORA, spinal cord injury without radiographic abnormality. This is predominantly a pediatric focus, typically in children younger than 8 years old, after something like a low-speed MVC or a trampoline fall. What's the classic vignette?
The child is initially well, but then develops limb weakness or paresthesias hours later. The critical diagnostic challenge here is that plain films and CT scans are normal. This is a major pitfall on the shelf, clearing the collar after a normal CT in a symptomatic child.
So if imaging is normal, what's happening and how do you actually diagnose it?
The pathophysiology is due to the more elastic pediatric spine, which can stretch and cause cord or ligament injury without a bone fracture. To diagnose it, you need an MRI of the entire cord, typically the cervical region, as it's most common. The MRI will show edema, hemorrhage, or a ligamentous tear that the CT missed.
And management for a confirmed SCIWORA?
It's rigid immobilization, a rigid cervical collar or TLSO if lower, for 6 to 12 weeks. The patient needs to be admitted for neuro observation, a neurosurgery consult is essential, and activity restriction from contact sports is required for at least 3 months. And importantly, steroids are not routinely recommended for SCIWORA, as the evidence is limited. All right, team, that was another high-yield session on characteristic spine trauma. Let's wrap up with 5 more high-yield facts to lock in this knowledge.
First up, a Jefferson fracture, C1 burst, often presents with a normal neuro exam after an axial load injury, but requires a CTC spine and SCTA neck to rule out vertebral artery injury.
Next up, a hangman fracture, C2 pars or pedicle injury, is typically from hyperextension in MVCs and is often neurologically silent.
Third, a chance fracture, T12L2 flexion distraction, mandates an obligatory CT abdomen and pelvis with IV contrast to rule out associated small bowel, mesenteric, or pancreatic or duodenal injuries, which are frequently missed.
Fourth, SCIWORA, spinal cord injury without radiographic abnormality, is a pediatric diagnosis where a child has neurological deficits despite normal plain films and CT. Diagnosis requires an MRI of the entire cord, and strict immobilization is needed.
And finally, for both Jefferson and hangman fractures, management involves distinguishing stable injuries, collar, from unstable ones, halo vest, or surgical fusion based on displacement or ligamentous involvement.
Excellent work today, team. Keep those pearls shining for the shelf. We'll see you next time here on Surgery Shelf Prep.
Later.